Welcome to Who Are You, a CSI podcast. I am Raven, and I've seen CSI through and through around 3 to 4 times.
And I'm Nick, and this is my first time experiencing these episodes.
And today we are reviewing season 4, episode 4, Feeling the Heat, original air date October 23rd, 2003. Director is Kenneth Fink, writers are Anthony E. Zeiker and Eli Talbert. And we start this episode and then spend a lot of time, at least in my opinion, in this episode, talking about a heat wave with shots of the Vegas in the background.
Yeah. So,
Nick, what is our Vegas score for today's episode?
Yeah, we have a lot of Vegas shots, but there's also like a lot of suburbia shots
there too,
which we don't give credit. I think even the opening scene is like the first shot is just like something random, and then there's a shot of the strip, and then there's a shot of something else, you know, and it goes that way. But we do end up at 45, which, given the new rules, is
a respectable number.
Very strong. That would have been well over. Let's count them up real quick. About 10 total shots of the Vegas Strip this episode. Oh, yeah. Almost entirely, as you said, during these like news weather update over talks, right?
Yes.
That we have with the episode.
Yep.
Which obviously we're not going to cover every single time.
No. That's why I was like, you know what? Let's mention it now, because I really don't want to spend this entire episode recanting that, because, you know, you kind of get it with the first one.
Yeah. And it's important to.
Yeah. It's good to like keep, like, I understand that they want to like keep emphasizing it, which is fine, but I don't want to spend a lot of time in our podcast talking about it.
I will say we have probably had 3 or 4 episodes already in the last few seasons where at different times Brass or someone has been like, it was 120 degrees out the other day, or, you know,
and
it's not, they make it sound like they kind of give this idea that they're accustomed to it, but it's a heat wave. But then they were like, it's only day 8, and I was like, I'm sure if you're 8 days into a heat wave in Vegas, it's a real big, serious deal.
I'm sure it is.
But like 8 days doesn't sound as dramatic as they,
I don't know, I
then associate stuff with.
I'm just saying that, I mean, we're in New England, so it's a different animal. But I will say about 4 days into a heat wave here, I'm done.
Oh, yeah.
I'm done.
But we don't live in Vegas, right?
I know, I'm saying. I know we don't, but still. After about 4 days of a heat wave, I'm like, you know what? I'd rather not. Like, I don't really want to do this.
we've had like 3 weeks of like sub-freezing weather every day.
Oh, it's been so cold.
I'm sure 4 days into that, the people in Vegas would be done too.
It's true.
But I also...
I've been done. My hands are so cold.
I don't know the answer to this. Is the definition for a heat wave different in Vegas?
I
got to think, because around here, it's 90 degrees or higher.
Yeah.
And I got to think they get that a lot.
Yes.
So they must have a different local definition.
But I will also say that our 90 degrees is not the real feel of 90 degrees.
No. Well, yeah. Well, it's, yeah.
Generally speaking, because of humidity.
90s is usually really oppressive.
Yes. 90s is usually like a real feel of like 104.
Hot. Yeah.
You know, so just for context, just for those listeners who are not based in New England. So regardless, heat wave, cold wave, they all stink. Give me fall. But we see Vegas. We hear about the heat wave. We then go to a parking lot. I did notice that everybody's wearing full pants, though. I was like, if it's a heat wave, why everybody in pants?
And it's an office park. You gotta go to work.
Like, why all in pants? But as they're there, a woman spots a baby in the car. She starts screaming for help. You know, a few people kind of come towards her. This man ends up breaking the window of the car that the baby is in. We then are with Grissom and Catherine on scene. Jim Brass is already there. And Catherine has to point out that a car is not a babysitter. People need to learn. Or I think maybe Jim Brass. Somebody says, you got to learn that cars are not a babysitter. I think it's Catherine. Or a dog sitter. This is true. Also, don't leave your dogs in the car. Unless you have like the AC running and you can monitor that. And I'm not going to judge. But as they're in the car and examining the baby, a man arrives. He's like, well, that's my car. Why is everyone freaking out? And then they're like, do you have a baby? And he's like, oh, no, Joshua. And starts having a rough go of it. So
this man is my spot the guest star.
Oh, okay. This is not my spot.
This is Air Gross,
who
plays Paul Winston. This is what I was saying earlier. I can't read my own writing.
Oh,
In the, I wrote slash father. That's what that says.
Yeah, that's fair. That makes sense. I mean,
Paul Winston slash father. So he's in a bunch of stuff that I've seen. I feel like I know him as that guy who's in a bunch of stuff that I've seen.
Very fair.
More so than anything else. He is in 4 episodes of The Riches, which is a show I've talked about. on this podcast before as something that I liked. And then, like, if I go through the list, there's like, oh yeah, I watched that show. It's like one episode here, one episode there. So I think in sort of aggregate, I know him very much. I did spend a bunch of time trying to figure out if I thought he was someone else, because I was so blown away that I couldn't find a specific, he's this person in that show.
I feel this is another instance, and I could be wrong, maybe this is not how you feel about it, but I feel like this is another instance of he must look like somebody else.
Yeah.
Because I was convinced I knew who he was too, and then I went through his IMDb and I was like, I don't know him.
His IMDb photo looks really weird. But when you look at some of the other photos, I was like, yeah, no, that's definitely the guy I was thinking of. I will say he looks a little like Pee Wee Herman, which maybe like made him more memorable in my brain. Like maybe sometimes when people look like other famous people,
yeah,
you remember them better.
Yeah. It makes like a more secure connection in your brain.
Yeah. Like you're making that association to something you know very well instead of just like this random person. But yeah, he's also in the show Leverage. And when I looked at the shot of him from Leverage, I was like, yeah, that's, I know that guy. I remember him from the show from Leverage, but he's in one episode. So it's like, it's not like that's the only thing I knew him from. That's just another like reinforcing of like, yeah, I know this guy. Yeah. He's just in a bunch of stuff.
That's fair. So yeah, so we learn, is the father of baby Joshua here. We also learn in the scene that inside the car was 145 degrees, which is very serious business.
I took a little umbrage with this measuring the inside of the car.
When the door was open?
The door is open. The window has been broken for a long time. Realistically,
it's probably whatever 170.
Number they didn't really like do a measurement, but whatever number they would have measured, it would probably was even hotter when that happened.
Oh, 100%. I thought I had the exact same thought. We go to credits, thankfully not with a ba-dum-ching to credits. They accept the gravity of the situation and we just go to credits. Upon return from credits, Catherine and David are at the car. David is guessing, given the like conditions and the temperature, that baby Joshua died no more, like could have possibly died no more than an hour ago. Like normally it would have been like 3 to 4 hours, but because of the heat, he's saying, you know, it might not have been more than an hour ago. Grissom brings a sheet over. He, because of all the looky-loos, which I will say has never affected Grissom before,
in
what we have witnessed ever, is like, we're going to treat this baby as if he's still alive. And so Catherine, they wrap the baby up. Catherine carries him to the coroner van. Coroner van drives away.
Even using the word looky-loo sounds very un-Grissom.
Yeah, it was. Yeah,
it's like they wrote that line for Catherine. They were like, Grissom doesn't really have anything to say.
Let's have Grissom say it instead.
Because he's like more like common. That's a very like common parlance, and Grissom is always like very technical in his speech. He'd be like, "Oh, all these unwatchers."
Yeah, I agree. It was. I found the whole scene here a little bit strange. But we leave storyline A behind. We're with Nick and Sarah at a lake with a officer. There is a young woman deceased. It looks like her head got split. And they're, we'll later confirm this, but they're thinking that she did not drown.
Yeah.
So, but we'll, don't worry. Doc Robbins has multiple appearances in the show.
Yeah.
So we'll have multiple consultations with Doc Robbins to find out what went down. We then have Jim Brass talking to the father, Paul Winston, aka our Spot the Guest Star. Catherine is like watching the interrogation. She's not in the room, but she's watching it happen. And the dad, is talking about how he was supposed to be dropping Joshua off at daycare, but that's not his normal routine. Like usually his wife does that, but his wife was on a business trip, so then he had to do it, and he just was so overwhelmed with work, and he just got to work and he forgot that, you know, baby Joshua was in the back seat. And
I don't have a kid. I can't really speak from personal experiences, but I have definitely heard stories and anecdotes of like people doing similar things. Now, whether it carried on for so long or so crazy, I was like, at this point, I was very much like, this sounds pretty reasonable to me.
Yes. So there is.
Yeah.
I was going to mention this later, but this is a perfect segue to this. I will link this in the show note description of this episode. There is a very poignant investigative journalist kind of piece posted by the Washington Post more than 15 years ago. Because when I opened it up, the very top of it was like, this was more than 15 years ago. And I was like, I know I read it a long time ago. But it is called Fatal Distraction: Forgetting a Child in the Backseat of a Car is a Horrifying Mistake. Is it a crime? And it is like a very long piece. You can, like, I'm looking at the, like, if you wanted to, like, listen to the audio of it, it is a 49 minute listen to.
Wow.
So it is a very, very long piece that dives into this topic. And if this is something that you're trying to wrap your head around, I would suggest at least, like, taking a look at this piece. It is a very, very well written piece and very well investigated and researched piece. And I will link it in the show notes for anyone who might want to go ahead and take a peek.
I just very quickly found this website, kidsincars.org. I think they probably cover many things. They have a section called Hot Cars, and it says since 1990, 1,125 children have died in hot cars in the United States. Mm-hmm. 7,500 have survived with various degrees of injury.
Yes.
And so this is happening all the time.
All the time.
I'm sure for a plethora of reasons.
Yep.
So I'm sure some of them would match the circumstances here, just from a statistical anomaly standpoint.
Yep.
But I do know that I forget things in the back of my car all the time. I have made it to work to realize I didn't have my laptop bag with me anymore. Yep. You know what I mean? Now that's not a kid. I'm not trying to make a equivalence here as more of a, like, people or humans, they have varying degrees of memories for forgetfulness. So I literally was like, is this whole story, like, just going to be like, what do we do about these poor people who left their baby in the backyard? It turns out there's a lot more going on in it, as much as, like, there's just layers to this story.
Yes.
I think they did a really good job with this storyline in terms of, like, somebody threw this out as a storyline and, like, someone was like, yeah, but how are we going to fill a whole episode around this?
Right. And this is storyline A. This is not the, like, almost throwaway storyline C. This is like the main focus.
This feels like if somebody pitched it as a B and then somebody came up with enough good ideas that they were like, we can make this an A.
We can make this an A. So again, I'll link that article in the show notes. We could legitimately do an entire podcast on this article. So I don't want to spend too much time going into it, but it's a very well-written piece. So so essentially he was supposed to drop Joshua off at daycare. He just got overwhelmed by work. It's not his usual routine. Wife is in LA on business. So we then are back with storyline B. Nick and Sarah are with the body at HQ. Sarah finds, like, green, quote unquote, something in her, like, head wound as they're examining her. Nick finds the locker key in her shorts. And I know that obviously you have to fully search a dead body. I will say it just felt awkward where he pulled the key out of.
Yeah. I think they, put it in a place so it's inconspicuous. And then it really wasn't shot very well.
It was not shot well. So I'm not holding that against Nick. I just, both times I watched it, I was like, I don't particularly like that. But we learn in this
We keep it secure.
Yeah. But we learn in the scene that they both applied for a promotion, which we never talk about the rest of the episode.
No. There's a lot of.
But I'm going to mention it.
There's a lot of this thing shows up and then we never talk about it again.
Never talk about it again. Yep. David enters. He begins washing the body. As he's doing so, he finds this, like, one area that almost seems like water repellent. So he points it out to Sarah. Sarah's like, oh yeah, I don't know what that is either. Don't worry, folks. We're going to come back around to that.
Bring up that I was like, huh, what's that? And then they talk about something else. And I was like, wait, were they insinuating that that's what that thing was? And then it's like 5 minutes until they tell you what that thing actually was.
Yeah, it takes a little while before we come back.
I was like, so it was very confusing watching it. I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, no. Instead, we stay with Nick and Sarah, but now they are with Doc Robbins in one of the instances that he is allowed outside of the lab.
Yep. Well, contractual obligation, 10 times a season.
Yep. We learn that, in fact, the cause of death was not drowning. Instead, she suffered a blow to the head, which then led to a cervical, like a spinal dislocation, which
broke her neck.
Broke her neck, killed her. And Doc Robbins estimates that she did still have stomach. She had food in her stomach still, or in her like intestinal tract. And he estimates that she ate about 2 to 4 hours before she passed away.
As I say, don't go eating and
laking. So we go to a deputy DA introducing himself to Catherine. He is asking
very important character in this episode.
Very important character on this episode. He's asking a lot of questions about the situation with baby Joshua and his father, and he wants to put dad in jail. He is like, yep. I am sick of this. This needs to be like a crime. He needs to be punished. But
we never hear from this character.
We never hear from him again. Nope. At least not this episode. We don't. Nope.
There's a line here where he's like telling Catherine to like cross all her T's, dot all her I's, essentially.
Yeah. And she's like, I always do.
She says, I always do. And I was like, Catherine, you really can't say that.
Like, actually, after
you contaminated a piece of evidence to do a DNA test for personal reasons.
That is true.
You can say, I know typically that's what we think of as Catherine's character.
Right.
But
yes,
it really wasn't. You got to get at least one season removed from that story.
This is true. We haven't. Before
you say, I always do.
Yeah, there hasn't quite been enough distance there. I agree.
Also, if you remember the lab explosion incident that happened.
This is also true.
That long ago.
That's also true.
So like in the last, not that many episodes.
Yeah,
she's they really like turned, like had Catherine turn heel in terms of how good she is at
we're dropping wrestling terminology. Yeah. And so we go to Grissom and Catherine still searching the car. Catherine points out that the car seat was properly like installed. That's not a lot of times people don't know how to install them properly, but it was properly installed. But she does notice that there's no indentation on the leather. So the father so the father seems to be telling the truth when he says he's not the one that usually drives baby Joshua because it doesn't look like there's any indentation on the leather. Grissom spots some like very dark liquid. Catherine collects it. It's not blood, but we'll follow up. There's quite a lot of follow up in this episode.
Very messy, by the way. Yes. By the amount of that, I was assuming it was like juice.
Yes.
Until they told us what it was.
Spoiler alert: not juice. We then go to storyline C.
Yeah, I was thinking early on when we talked about these episodes, you would say things like, I like my three storylines. And I was like, we have not really had.
Oh, no, my two. I like my two. Two is like the sweet spot.
Or maybe you said two sometimes three. And I was like, yeah. We were like not really had threes. And I was like, oh, we got a three.
We got a
and
three.
It's legit. It's not like a fake three where it also becomes one of the other ones.
No, it stays separate. So Warwick is inside of a house. Grissom joins him, I guess. Catherine's just left on the baby Joshua case all by her lonesome.
Grissom's like, oh yeah, Catherine's in the baby case. Like it's unimportant. So one person is enough for that. This guy in the chair is more important. I'll point out to you, Grissom does stay quote unquote involved in this scene or this case, but he never returns to this scene. He's only ever talking to Warwick in the office.
This is true.
For the rest of the episode. I didn't really clock that the first time through. But when we got back to this scene, the second watch through, I went, wait, is Grissom even involved in this case ever again? And then he is.
Yeah.
But he's just like at the lab having conversations with Warwick.
Yeah.
And because Archie ends up making a trip.
Warwick's definitely the lead in this case.
Yeah, yeah. Warwick could have done this by himself. I mean, basically does all the work.
He basically does all the work himself.
And Grissom
good,
is the
good
best
management, Grissom. Taking the credit for someone who reports to you. Yeah.
I think Grissom got like a light shooting week this week. I wonder if they were like shooting. Because sometimes I think they like maybe are like pre-shooting the next episode or
anything's
going on. So it wouldn't surprise me if there's a big Grissom plot line coming up.
We're gonna find out. Before we do, we're on the scene. Warwick is there. He's taking pictures of this victim, who is Wesley Jones. He is dead in a massage chair, and they're trying to figure out: is he starting? Is he falling off a diet? Because there's some like conflicting items around this man's home.
Kind of cruel way to talk about it.
I agree. I didn't particularly like how this was addressed. but he was taking a supplement that had ephedra in it, and ephedra plus heat, not a good combination. So they're starting to think he died of heat stroke. He took the ephedra, he went for a run, came back, died of a heat stroke.
If you're under the age of 30, you probably don't know what ephedra is, but like from the maybe the very end of the 90s to the or like mid 2000s, it was a drug. There was a very famous brand, at least that I know from like TV ads, called Hydroxycut. And they basically took it off the market because people were having heart attacks and different or other things that was it was like basically deemed unsafe. But by basically like causing your metabolism, like your heart to race, your metabolism to go up, you could quote unquote lose weight by burning more calories. And it was apparently bad for people. But I was like, oh yeah, I remember ephedra.
We have Catherine walking into the lab where Greg Sanders is, and they're talking. This is sort of like a continuation of the conversation with the DA, where Greg Sanders is like thinking that him with the father not being charged with murder would be like a slap on the wrist. And Catherine seems to be, and to be fair, Catherine's the only, I mean, we don't know, the DA is apparent. We do learn that the DA, because he mentions like his baby being in the car for like 10 seconds or something. But other than that, Catherine's the only parent here. Yeah. So Catherine seems a little more sympathetic to the plight of the Winstons than almost anybody else does in this episode.
Both, I think, the thought of like losing a child, but also she probably has, you know, dealt with the juggling of things before. Mm-hmm. And especially as a single parent, she probably has, you know, been stressed or confused, you know, whatever's going on.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so in the same scene, the printout happens. We learn that dark red liquid was, in fact, cough syrup.
The speed of this readout.
Very quick.
Makes me wonder what Greg Sanders does with the rest of his time.
We have some lab magic going on in this episode.
Oh, we've had that before. There's a fingerprinting plastic deposition thing that Jackie did in like the first episode that she's in, where it's like, if they could go that fast, I don't ever want to hear the lab is backed up ever
again. Yeah, you're like, no, that's you can't be backed up if this is the speed in which you can operate. It's not, listeners, just for clarity's sake. It's not how it works in real life. Nick and Sarah are then at the locker on the lake. We learn that their victim is Sophia Renata, and they're trying to figure out, was she there with a boyfriend or a beach buddy? Because there's like men's clothing and a man's wallet inside of this locker.
There's a weird line where they're like, oh, the Rangers found us the locker or something, right? Before they go here, but probably was in the last scene. And there's just like the one place with lockers, and I'm sure the key has a number. I was like, did you need a police officer to find you the locker? Yeah. You run a spiral grid pattern in your sleep.
This is true. But finding, so they go from the lockers, they talk to the guy running the Wave Runner rentals, and he admits that he saw the victim with a guy that she met that day. And they learn, at least from the rental guy, that the man in question is Mark Young. So now they are looking for the missing Mark Young as part of this investigation. Before that, though, Jim Brass and Catherine are with Mrs. Winston, so Joshua's mother, and she is upset and she is frustrated that she asked her husband to do one thing, which was to drop Joshua off at daycare, and he not only didn't drop him off at daycare, but also killed him in the process.
Yeah, that's going to be
pretty rough. Pretty rough.
It's going to be one of the worst things your partner's ever done.
Yeah, there's a lot of... I've been in a TikTok / Red Note because TikTok got banned and then back, but it might get banned again thing. And there's a lot of videos that pop up in my suggested about weaponized incompetence. And this kind of reminded me of that a little bit. So Mrs. Winston also talks about how Joshua had a slight cough. That's why he had cough syrup in his system. Like, she had given him cough syrup the night before and had told her husband that if he still had a cough, to give it to him that morning. She then sees her. They kind of like are like, okay, like, we're done questioning you for now. And she sees her husband out in the hallway, and she goes and like just starts like pounding on his chest, like, you know, how could you do this, and I asked you to do one thing. And then they walk out together, or presumably, he kind of like carries her out, sort of
presumably that's the first time they've seen each other.
Yes.
You know, since anything's happened.
Yes, that is what I think we're led to believe. We then have Nick and Sarah with Mr. Young, so Mark Young's father. Nick makes buddy-buddy with him.
Yeah.
Sarah's obviously like a little like, hey, we're going to like, you know, your son's missing. Like, you know, we know he was with the victim and now he's missing. So like, we might have to get a warrant to search your house to try to figure out what's going on. And he's like, my son. And then Nick's like, no, it's all right. We don't need a warrant, do we, buddy? Like, we can just come and take a look at your house. It's kind of
like good cop, bad copping. It felt like at the time.
It did kind of feel like that.
As we go through the episode, we realize there's maybe a little bit more to that.
Yeah. Well,
I will say, I literally wrote down in my notes at this time, are we not worried that Mark is also dead? Because like the dad's like, I haven't heard from him in several, like I haven't seen him in several days.
Yep.
There's like, he like rented this wave runner that he never returned.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, he's missing. And I'm like, well, if two people left and one of them dead, that is true. One person could just be missing. Like if he's responsible, he could have just peaced out. That's fair. But like, I would also be concerned that he's dead.
Yeah. Like, you haven't heard from him. Do you have any friends? Is there a number? Like, do you have a phone number for him? Can you give him a call? You know what I mean? Like, does he have an address if he doesn't live with you? If he does live with you, he hasn't been home in 3 days. Is that normal? All those kind of questions you'd expect to ask. They almost like treat him as though he's already a suspect, presumed to be on the run.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. or not even a suspect, almost like presumed to be guilty, on the run. I was like, wait, why are we not considering the fact that this person might also be dead? Because like, we have no evidence that he's still alive.
No evidence.
None whatsoever.
Nope. So we then are back with Warwick. He is with Doc Robbins, but now Doc Robbins is back in the morgue. He had his time.
His jacket back on.
He had his time outside of the morgue. He's back in there. And we learn that the victim did not die of heat stroke. Instead, he was electrocuted. Low power shock, electrocuted. So now we get to find out by what. Before we do that, though, Sarah is with Hodges. And we learn that the spot that was on the victim's body was suntan lotion. But she wasn't wearing suntan lotion. Because she was trying to get a tan. So she wasn't wearing suntan lotion. So Sarah's like, oh, that must have been transfer from Mark Young, our presumed killer, to the victim. We also learn in the scene that the green substance that they pulled from her head wound was algae. So this brings us to Nick and Sarah looking at a map and feeling overwhelmed about where to even start. Because it was just like very generic algae.
Yeah,
that could be like basically anywhere in this entire body of water.
But also, like, it's all one giant interconnected waterway.
Yeah,
like no matter what it was, like I don't think algae is another thing. It's like it only grows in this one cove.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know enough about algae to make any statement on that front.
To be honest,
yeah. Greg Sanders is at the door though. He's here to rescue them. Points out some spots. Points out some coves that are known makeout spots, and is kind of like, hey. If these are like two young budding romance, maybe this is where you want to go check out. And he also offers like an extra set of hands. He's like, hey, if you need an extra set of hands. And they're like, nope, stay in the lab, you.
He crawled into a sewer for you to find a soda bottle. I mean, he didn't find the soda bottle, but he found a shirt.
Yeah, nope, I agree. But they say no.
No. Nope.
They tell him to stay in the lab. We then have Catherine back.
There's a weird winking at, again, why can I not remember people's names that we say all the time?
I don't know. I don't know who's winking at who.
Sanders is winking at
Sarah.
Yeah. Like he does like a call me, like hand sign.
Oh, does he?
Yeah. Cause he was like, could be like Mr. Casanova. I know about all the makeup spots. He does like a call me thing to Sarah on the way out the door. I was like, what? That's not appropriate.
Oh, Greg Sanders.
You got to go back and watch that. I was like, wait, what was that?
Yeah. Oh, I think I remember that. And I thought that I thought he was doing that as in a, like, if you need me on the scene, call me.
I think it was a little both, right? It was supposed to be cheeky, right?
Okay. That, I mean,
and Sarah like smirks or something. And I was like, all right.
I mean, that would fit into Greg Sanders' character.
He's been hitting on Sarah basically at work every day.
This is true.
In every episode for like the last two seasons. So. Yeah,
that's true. Okay. I mean, totally fair. So then we have Catherine back with the car. In searching the car, in the trunk, she finds a blanket. But the blanket is not Joshua's blanket. It is Howard's blanket.
This is so weird. All I could think is this like old baby stuff that you kept and reused? Because like, okay, we're going to keep it as a memento.
Why would it be in like a plastic bag in the trunk of your car?
Yes. Yeah. Like, why is it like in the least memento-esque place possible? Mm-hmm. I also was like, wait, did I not know the name of this baby?
Oh, you were like, wait a second.
I was like, his name is Howard? Right? I didn't think that was...
I don't think that sounds right. This brings us to a Jim Brass and Catherine Walk and Talk, where we learn that Howard was the Winston's firstborn child who passed away due to Tay-Sachs. Yes.
Tay-Sachs.
Which is similar to MS. It's essentially a wasting disease.
Yeah. It took me like five times for them saying, be like, wait, I know that word.
It's T-A-Y-S-A-C-H. Yeah. Tay-Sachs. We then have Warwick and Archie there with the chair and basically every other electrical item that was near the victim that was electrocuted. And as they're going through it, they realize it's not the chair. Warwick discovers that current went through the phone and he thinks he knows why. Heat lightning. Go heat lightning. We'll come back to this. Before we do, Nick and Sarah are on a boat. They find the missing wave runner. There's no Mark Young in sight at the moment, though. Instead, Sarah spots some footprints. They decide to follow them. Before we stay on that thread, Warwick and Grissom are looking at a stripe map, and there are no heat strikes within the last 3 days in that
near
area.
Yeah.
So they're like, okay, that's not it. This is where Warwick goes, oh, I wonder if the phone wasn't how the electricity got in, but how the electricity got out.
That was the pass to ground, basically.
Yes. So Warwick and Archie are then back at the home. As Nick mentioned, Grissom never returns to the scene. I did note, poor Greg Sanders. Greg Sanders was like, please bring me out into the field. And they were like, nope. And then Warwick just brings Archie.
He asked Greg asked the wrong person, right? He Nick and Sarah instead of asking Warwick.
I did feel a little bad for Greg Sanders in the scene, but as they're kind of walking through the scene and trying to kind of piece this together, they're realizing that the point of entry had to be somewhere else on the body other than the hands. Like, that was not how the electricity came in, which Warwick is like, wait a second, his bare feet touched the floor. So they follow some like little marks and some like little like dried up water stains to a melted or near melted power strip. And they're like, got you. Before we wrap up there, though, Nick and Sarah are now cliffside looking over a 50-foot drop. And they're talking about, you know, maybe their victim jumped over. You know, they're like kids having fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Yay, like, let's jump off the cliffside.
There's this like sinister notion that.
Yeah, he like sort of pushed her.
He was going to push her off or throw her off.
Yeah.
Like, as if we continued to need to blame him.
Yeah.
And which I thought was like a little aggressive, but. The thing that, like, I was screaming at the TV, basically, over was, like, you do not, like, kill a person and then go back, like, take the rider back to where you were, right? You take it somewhere else. You know what I mean? Like, you...
Yeah.
And it's, like, and they, like, followed the only footprints they had to the top of this thing. Like, why are we not jumping to conclusions that Mark is dead already? I was, like, so doubled, tripled down on my earlier hypothesis, which, spoiler alert,
We'll find out pretty soon. So
yeah,
Nick doesn't say that, though. Nick instead says, well, the evidence isn't up here. It must be down there.
Dun, dun, dun.
We then have Catherine at her locker. She's looking at pictures of Lindsay because, again, she's the only she's the only parent in the well, Jim Brass is too. But in the CSI group, core group, she's the only parent that we know of. Greg Sanders enters with the results on baby Joshua. He did have cough syrup in his system, so they're like, okay, that makes sense. But he also had pesticides. I was going to try to say the like fancy word for it. I'm not going to try to do that. Why did I even write it down? Like, am I doing pesticides? He had pesticides in his system.
I was impressed Catherine knew what he was saying, because I never heard it referred that way.
Yeah, so pesticides. So they're obviously like, wait a second here. So Jim Brass and Catherine are at the Winston's home. They need access to gardening supplies, for obviously trying to find pesticides. And we, the next few scenes, we're kind of just like flipping between storyline A and storyline B. We then have Nick and Sarah giving guidance to divers. They're now down below from the cliff. They're giving guidance to like the divers about where to search. Catherine, in searching their shed, finds pesticides. One of the divers pops back up and shows a photo of Mark Young. So, confirmation that Mark did not walk away from this. Mark did. Jim Brass is then, you know, after Catherine walks out with the bottle of pesticides bagged up, Jim Brass is like, to the Winstons, like, let's get out of this heat. Okay, like, you're coming down to the station and we need to talk a little
bit. Let's go downtown.
Yeah. So then Jim Brass is with Vicky Winston. He's asking her, like, why did they never mention Howard? Why do you not mention you had another baby and that baby also died? And she's like, that was traumatic. You know, he passed away due to this terrible illness. And, you know, I didn't want to relive that.
We didn't leave him in the back of a car.
And Paul Winston, the father, is taking full accountability. He's like, don't, like, my wife didn't do anything wrong. You know, I'm the one that left Joshua in the car. But in talking to Mr. Winston, they inform him that they're going to have to exhume Howard. Because now, like, two children of yours have passed away, and we need to confirm Howard's cause of death. So then we have Doc Robbins and Catherine with Howard, and Catherine pulls a fluid sample from little baby Howard here. She then delivers the sample to Greg Sanders to run. And again, lab magic. She just like stands behind him as he boop, boop, boop. We have a little montage of Greg Sanders working his lab magic.
Can we pause to reflect on how impressed Doc Robbins was with the embalmer?
He was very impressed with the embalmer. Because he said, like, ooh, good embalmer. And then once she was able to pull out as much fluid as she was, he was like, never mind, a great embalmer. I mean, to be fair, I mean, this is, we just exhumed a body like 3 episodes ago.
Yeah.
2 or 3 episodes. Like, it wasn't long ago that we exhumed a body. So.
And this has been in the ground for years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
It was good.
Yeah.
But they spent so much time on it, I just had to bring it up.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Yeah. He did very specifically. The second watch. He did. Yeah, you're like, okay. So we learn that the sample, the only thing baby Howard had in his system was an anti-inflammatory, which is
the drug
used to help make Tay-Sachs not as painful. It's not going to cure it, but it essentially just makes
it's part of the hospice care.
Basically. Yeah, it's basically for hospice care.
Or it is hospice, but
essentially,
palliative care.
Palliative care, yes. Yeah, there you go.
That's the term they use.
Yeah. So Catherine is in with a doctor, and this is my spot.
Oh.
Guest star. This is Carlos Jacot. He plays Dr. Gardner in this episode, and I know him from Firefly, but I'm trying to remember what his name is. In this episode of Firefly, he plays Lawrence Dobson in one episode of Firefly, but it's not just a like he's there for 3 seconds and then
he disappears 15% of the show if he's in one episode.
That is, I mean, this is all true, but he's a big part of the episode that he's in.
What was the actor's name?
It is Carlos Jacot.
Okay. Oh, he looks very familiar. I don't think he looks familiar at all in the...
He's been in quite a few things, so you might know him.
He was just in Barbie, apparently.
He was just... Which I did see Barbie. I don't remember him in Barbie.
Don't remember him at all either, yeah.
But he has a pretty, like, pretty expansive IMDb list, but I definitely know him from that episode of Firefly, so...
You don't know him from 20 episodes of She Spies?
No, I never saw She Spies, so...
I don't know what that show is.
No. He was also in 2 episodes of Seinfeld.
Oh, wait. Was he?
He was Pool Guy and Raymond.
Yes. He's Pool Guy. Okay. Yeah. He looks like, I don't know. His IMDb picture looked very familiar. I was like, it didn't really look like that in the thing.
But he's my spot to guest star. So
that's cool.
She's talking to Dr. Gardner, and he has been the Winston's doctor for their children, you know, for Howard and then Joshua. He was there with them when Howard passed away. And he's letting Catherine know that they tested Joshua in utero to find out if he had Tay-Sachs, and it came back negative. But they had just brought him in because he was showing early signs of Tay-Sachs. And so he ran an enzyme test to confirm, still waiting on the results. So
this is like very early, I feel like, for DNA testing. So like, I think that they, you know, like they probably have to sort of like walk your average audience person through this.
Yeah, put through this.
And they do a good job of it.
Yeah, I think they do a good job of it. We then have Sarah and Nick back with Doc Robbins, and we learn that Mark did die of drowning, and he also had a burst eardrum. And so Nick, in putting these things together, thinks that Mark jumped in after Sophia to rescue her, and then his death was accidental.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Sarah's saying we can't prove that. She's not saying we can disprove it. She's not saying that's not what happened. But she's saying that, like, we can't prove that that is what happened. That is a possibility of what happened.
And honestly, I agree, like, wholeheartedly. I believe I actually kind of, like, at this point was like, oh, I wonder if they're going to, like, figure out that she jumped in to save him.
Right.
Because that's equally likely. Like, he dived in. He, you know, for whatever reason, didn't come up, and she didn't want to jump. And then she said, oh my God, I got to save him, And she jumped in, she hits her head, she floats down the river all the same.
Right.
We have no way of knowing the order of operations
here. We have no idea, right? And so Sarah's just saying, we can't prove that that's what happened. Again, not saying there's no way, but she's just like, we can't prove that that's what happened here. Warwick is then with Grissom. They're looking at the crime scene photos, and Warwick explains how the victim made a homemade swamp cooler, which might be the title of the episode, because I feel like all the other poignant lines are really sad, and I don't think I want them to be a title of the episode. And I was like, this is the only one that I'm like, all right, this one's kind of funny. Homemade swamp cooler. And essentially, he took this block of ice, put it in front of the fan to cool himself off in this heat wave. The ice block melted. It created a path of water from his feet to the burnt out electrical power strip, and thus
in the channel of electricity.
Yep. And that's the end of storyline C. We then wrap up storyline B with Nick talking to Mr. Young and essentially telling Mr. Young that his son died a hero.
Yeah.
That, like, way that he thinks what happened is what happened.
Yeah, which is like, I get it, but Sarah's point is perfect, right? Like, you can't tell people things that you don't know are true.
Right. So Sarah overhears this, and she's like, why did you say that? And Nick's like, oh, well, if you were him, like, wouldn't you want to have as much information? And she was like, but we can't, like, but we don't know that for sure.
Yeah.
Like, we don't know that. Like, you're just telling him something that we don't definitively know. So,
yeah, for all I know, your son was trying to show off. Or trying to be cute and stay underwater for too long. He goes down deep. His ear bone blows out. The person who just met freaks out, dives in after him, hits her head because she's not a good swimmer either.
Right.
And now he's cost his own life and someone else's.
Right. We don't know.
You know, like, that's equally, I want to say likely to happen, but equally plausible.
Equally plausible with the information they have.
Yeah.
Either one, you know, either one plausible. So,
or they did it together. Suicide pact, like those two kids in the desert in the prom dresses.
Who knows? So Sarah kind of ends this walk and talk just telling Nick to be careful, right? Like, be careful about kind of making these assumptions and giving out this kind of information when you don't have all the facts.
And that's paramount to what they normally do, right? You gotta only go by the evidence.
Yeah, Sarah sort of had a Grissom moment here and was kind of like, it kind of was like, hey, you don't know this, so don't go there.
She's channeling her inner Griss.
She's channeling her inner Grissom. So that is the end of storyline B, but we still have a little bit of storyline A to get through. So we have Jim Brass and Catherine back with the Winstons in interrogation. And we learn that Vicky, the mother, did handle Joshua when she was in the garden. Paul handed him over. And because, you know, they're trying to establish how could baby Joshua have gotten pesticides in his system. And so they're trying to set up the case that it was accidental exposure to pesticides. Like, he wasn't poisoned with pesticides.
Yeah, not intentional.
It was unintentional transfer from the mother to baby Joshua. And Jim Brass points out that when baby Joshua starts showing symptoms, it must have felt like they were reliving the nightmare of what happened to Howard. And Catherine points out that pesticide exposure mimics Tay-Sachs. So yep. A lot of the same symptoms overlap between the two of them. We then have a flashback to where the parents planned to kill Joshua because they thought he had Tay-Sachs, and they just simply couldn't bear going through the like long, slow process of watching their child die.
Euthanizing him, I guess.
Essentially. Essentially. Yeah. But this is when Catherine's like, ooh, gonna have to burst that bubble because that enzyme test that Dr. Gardner sent out was negative. You killed a perfectly healthy baby.
I think there's a little bit of comedy in how, like, on one hand, we're like, Nick, you can't just assume things and make up a story and tell something. On the other hand, like, but like when we're like interrogating these people,
you can't.
Maybe we're hoping they're gonna break down and tell us the truth.
Tell us. Yeah.
We are making a lot of jumps here.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah.
Like it. I get the thing you're going to be like. You're making a lot of jumps. I was like, I guess it's different because like there are many times where like some in the show where the next thing would be like, oh, I can't believe we killed our own kid. I mean,
none
of that happens. There's no like.
No. They kind of get they get choked up after Catherine says this, but there's no. Yeah, there's no admission of like, oh my gosh, what did we do? We killed our perfectly healthy baby boy, you know, like
no scene with the DA from before. Like,
nope, yeah, the DA enough, again never you know. Resurfaces.
So I didn't get the impression that they were going to get. I got the impression they're going to get away with it, other than the sort of internal moral horror that they'll suffer for the rest of their life.
Yeah, I don't know, because the last scene of the episode is us following Catherine out to her car, and then she sits in her car inside of the heat. And then fade to black, end of episode. So, Nick, what did you think about today's episode?
This episode was okay. I mean, I only gave it 3 out of 5. It wasn't the best to rewatch, so I gave it a play.
Yeah,
it was much more, I think, engaging to talk about.
Yeah.
It means I maybe it was a little bit more fun than I gave it credit for. But yeah, it was. We've had a couple of good episodes, so in my opinion, so. Yeah, this is like a 3 for me. I think they did a really good job with a lot of things in the episode, though. I think that actually the A storyline, I don't know. It's like all the storylines are fine. There was no one arrested in 3 storylines.
Oh, right? Yeah. It's been a while since
we had 3 like accidental deaths and then a mistaken murder.
Whoopsie murder.
Whoopsie. Infanticide.
Whoops.
Yeah. It was definitely very watchable. Like I would never tell anyone to skip this episode. But yeah, I just gave it 3 stars. I think I thought I might like reevaluate a half star. And then I watched it again. I was like, nah, no, that was fine.
Yeah, I guess I was going to say 2.5 stars, but now like you're sort of, okay, I'm just going to stick with 2.5 stars.
I was almost wondering earlier if I should go lower.
Because you swayed, like, because you really started to sway me towards higher. But if I'm just going to go purely on my own feelings, 2.5. This was definitely an episode that when I saw it was coming up, I was like,
I believe it because like, first off, the first time I watched it, I was like, yeah, 3 stars. I was like, I try to give this less than 3 stars. I'm like, no, like I was like, I didn't have like any big red flags in the episode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, and then I watched the second time and I was like, well, I'm not giving this any more points. I think I'm more surprised that it was as good of an episode to discuss, I think.
Yes. Yeah.
I generally thought about the content of the episode, which wasn't much.
Cause I don't know if we've mentioned it actually on the podcast, or we've just generally spoken about it like after we record or before we record, but Nick and I have realized that if the episode is a good episode, like if both of us end up like ranking it a higher score, the episode is longer. Our podcast episode is longer because there's like more to talk about and there's like more to dive in. And when we get to the end of the episode and we're like, oh, 2 stars or 2.5 stars, They tend to be the shorter episodes because there's just like not as much to dive into. But I agree that we ended up having like a lot more to talk about than we normally would for like a lower rated episode.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, yeah, I think those are good ratings. I think that it's probably an accurate representation of the episode. And I also think that based on my second watch through, if I had seen this episode multiple times before, I'd be like, oh.
Yeah, it's just, I think part of it for me is that I did read that Washington Post article, and essentially that article talks about the instances where it was not purposeful, right? Where someone legitimately accidentally left their kid in the car and the kid passed away. And so I think like trying to watch this and like have that sort of like in the back of my mind, you know what I mean? I was like,
I've sort of started to take umbrage with the CSI team in the last like season or so, how quickly they are to condemn human beings.
Very quick.
And they've had it go both ways, where the person did it and the person didn't do it.
Yes.
So like they aren't, like the writers aren't doing a bad job, but like I don't want the characters to be those kinds of people. I like these characters.
Yeah, you're like stop jumping to conclusions.
Yeah. Wait till the evidence bears itself out. Like I get follow the lead, but like they're like alone having snarky conversations about people.
Yeah.
Like that guy's a terrible murderer who killed his kid or something.
Yeah, and it's just again, like I do feel it's hard to give it like a 2.5 after we've had good conversations about it. And I think the Winstons both did a good job. Like that was, they were great guest stars but it just, there's a lot of judginess. There's a lot of, why was storyline C there?
Where did Grissom's do all of a sudden?
And then, and we talked about it. Yeah, like what Grissom, what you do? Like you can't blame it on your hearing anymore, Grissom. You can hear perfectly fine. You should be like on the scene and like in the weeds with your team. And then there were a lot of things introduced and then just never discussed again. Like DA, never discussed again. Sarah and Nick up for the same job. Never discussed again. Just like weird.
What is that job? Is it CSI level 4, level 2?
Yeah, like I want to know what level of CSI are we getting to? So it's fine. I think it's good to watch it. Like you said, I wouldn't skip this episode. I also would not rate it as a rewatch. And it's not even a good rewatch years later. Like as soon as this episode popped up, I was like,
I will say, if you haven't watched this episode and you've made it to this point in the podcast, skip it.
I don't know if I would say that.
Well, you know everything that happens. We just told you.
Oh, yeah. If you've listened to this podcast.
Yes. If you've made it to the end of this podcast.
Yeah, you don't need to go back and watch it.
But you never watch this episode.
It's okay. Don't go back.
We never suggest you listen to this podcast before you
watch the episode and then listen to the podcast.
Unless you're 20 years in the future recording a podcast about this podcast.
Yes.
Will you listen to this podcast without ever seeing the episode.
Yeah, yeah.
And then talk about our podcast. Then you can go back and watch.
Then you can go back. That's totally fine. Yeah. So, 2.5. It's fine. It has its good points. It has bad points. Meh. Pretty exact middle of the road there. So, we shall see where we rate, where we land with our next episode when we return next week with season 4, episode 5, Fur and Loathing.
Fur and Loathing.
Fur and Loathing. But otherwise, we'll talk to you next week.
No spoilers.
No spoilers.